but the hand only took him under the chin and turned his face so that he had to look again into Pope's eyes for a long time, for hours and hours, and suddenly, he couldn't help it, he began to cry. Pope burst out laughing.
"Go," he said, in the other Indian words. "Go, my brave Ahayuta."
He ran out into the other room to hide his tears.
"You are 15, said old Mitsima, in the Indian words. "Now I may teach you to work the clay."
Squatting by the river, they worked together.
"First of all," said Mitsima, taking a lump of wetted clay between his hands, "we make a little moon."
The old man squeezed the lump into a disc, then bent up the edges. The moon became a shallow cup. Slowly and unskillfully, he imitated the old man's delicate gestures.
"A moon, a cup, and now a snake."
Mitsima rolled out another piece of clay into a long, flexible cylinder, hooped it into a circle, and pressed it onto the rim of the cup.
"And another snake, and another, and another."
Round by round, Mitsima built up the sides of the pot. It was narrow. It bulged, narrowed again towards the neck. Mitsima squeezed and patted, stroked and scraped, and there at last it stood. In shape, the familiar water pot of Malpaye's, but creamy white instead of black, and still soft to the touch. The crooked parody of Mitsima's, his own, stood beside it. Looking at the two pots, he had to laugh.
"But the next one will be better," he said,
and began to moisten another piece of clay. To fashion, to give form, to feel his fingers gaining in skill and power, this gave him an extraordinary pleasure.
"A, B, C, vitamin D," he sang to himself as he worked. "The fat's in the liver, the cod's in the sea."
And Mitsima also sang a song about killing a bear. They worked all day, and all day he was filled with an intense, absorbing happiness.
"Next winter," said old Mitsima, "I will teach you to make the bow."
He stood for a long time outside the house, and at last the ceremonies within were finished. The door opened, they came out. Kothlu came first, his right hand outstretched and tightly closed as though over some precious jewel, her clenched hand similarly outstretched. Kiakimi followed. They walked in silence, and in silence behind them came the brothers and sisters and cousins and all the troop of old people. They walked out of the pueblo, across the mesa. At the edge of the cliff they halted, facing the early morning sun.